Bottomley, Rio 7.
We were not allowed to drink unboiled water owing to typhoid infection and had periodic injections and medical inspections. Of course, we had our share of fun. We had concert parties, and the YWCA were always willing and ready to help with private parties for birthdays and celebrations. We also had our share of girls who strayed off the straight and narrow. I think we had about 4 or 5 sent back to England to have babies, which isn't bad considering the number of personnel which passed through Camp 3 in roughly 2 years. We had quite a famous NCO in the person of Winifred Holtby, novelist, who was at Oxford. After being at Camp 3 for a short spell, she went on to Hooshenville, where a special signals unit were being formed, and many of the signal girls came back to work there. It was a repeater station. Holtby was very popular for her ghost stories at Hooshenville. She used to have them up half the night telling them ghost stories. Have you read any of her books? South Riding, that's a Yorkshire story. She was a Yorkshire girl, of course. Mandoa. She wrote a lot of books about South Africa. They're worth reading. She was a friend of Vera Brittain. Do you know Vera Brittain? She's the mother of somebody in Parliament. Forgotten it. Oh, she's a woman in the Labour Party that's very prominent. Her mother was Vera Brittain, and she'd know Winifred Holtby. But she was a grand person, really. She came out from Oxford. I think she went back to Oxford after the war. And she used to tell them ghost stories at Hooshenville. I wasn't at Hooshenville, but my husband was. He was sent there to work at the repeater station. And she used to frighten the life out of them with her ghost stories. She was a born novelist, really. She died in 1935 and is buried in Rudston Churchyard near Bridlington. I've been to see her grave. That little church has a lot of mementos of her. She was only 35 when she died. She died of cancer. The armistice came at long last, November the 11th, 1918. What a day. I think it was my busiest day of all, for I was kept at it, taking down telegrams from all the armies in our sector, reporting cessation of hostilities. In the evening, we were confined to camp for the celebrations. For the celebrations in the town knew no bounds, but we were allowed to have our boyfriends in for a dance. The officer thought it was safer to have let us bring our boys into the camp than for us to be out of her sight in the town and getting drunk or something, because everybody in the town were offering other people drinks and, you know, going absolutely crazy. Of course, we'd plenty of work to do, even if the fighting had ceased. But discipline was relaxed considerably, and coach parties were arranged to visit the battlefields for the less occupied of the staff. I still had my daily job of telephoning the hospitals and asking for the number of dead, and then arranging. It was an awful job, was that? I hated it at first, but I got used to it. I had to arrange with the AMTD for GS wagons and the carpenters to make the coffins, as for bearers, and the grave diggers who were wax. Women grave diggers in Abbeville. He said that boys should still go on dying even when the battle was over. I remember thinking about it. I mean, you expect people to die in the war, don't you? But I thought on Armistice Day, it did strike me that it was sad at the last minute for boys to die when the war was more or less, it wasn't actually over. An armistice is just a cessation of hostilities. It could have broken out again after. I didn't realise that at the time, but now I do know that an armistice isn't absolutely final. It can, like in Israel at the present time, they're supposed to have had an armistice, but they're still fighting, aren't they? They won't give up little skirmishes. It seemed very sad that boys should still go on dying even when the battle was over. However, 1918 Christmas was a very happy affair at the office. Turkey and plum pudding and all the extras served by the officers, even the colonels, and one of whom made a speech. That was Colonel Hutton Wilson. He was a regular soldier and a right disciplinarian. One of whom made a speech and said no medals or honours would go to any of the HQ staff, as we had only done our duty. Early in January, I had word from home that my mother was seriously ill. I applied for leave. She'd got diphtheria, actually. I applied for leave, but it was advised by Miss Welsford to take my discharge, as it would be quicker to get through than a special leave. I didn't want to leave like that, really, but I was most anxious about my mother, so I accepted my discharge and proceeded back to England. But by the time I finally reached home, my mother had recovered, and I felt very cross about the whole affair, as I would have liked to have gone on with my friends to work in Germany with the Army of Occupation. Having had the rough of it, I would have liked a bit of the smooth, but I had to consider my mother. However, many years later, 1938, I was at it again with the ATS as a sergeant, but that's another story. This, to the best of my ability and memory, is the rough outline of my time in the WACS. I am now 77 years of age, so may I be forgiven any discrepancies. I was mentioned in dispatches by Miss Welsford, presumably for duties during air raids. I've omitted to mention the wonderful work done by the Salvation Army, the Scottish Huts and ENSA. The Salvation Army fed us for very modest sums when food at the camp was unbearable. A half franc for stewed fruit and custard, a thick slice of bread and marge and a mug of tea. That's as far as I've got.
Did you ever meet any prisoners?
As a matter of fact, we had several working about the camp. They're very skilled people as a rule. They're skilled with wood and making things mechanically. And I don't know, I was silly about them really. I thought nothing good came out of Germany except music and dead Germans, but as I've grown older, I've altered my ideas. They're very good in discipline. They accept discipline. A lot of our people won't, especially the modern ones. They won't accept discipline. They want their own way or nothing. But Germans are very... They do as they're told, without question. And the soldiers, well, they had to do as they were told.
Did you hear stories about German atrocities?
Oh, yes, but then I've also heard stories of English atrocities. Cuts both ways, you know. They said that they were sticking babies on bayonets and things like that. Well, I don't believe all that.
Did you then?
Yes, I did then. I don't now, because I don't think they're as bad as the painted. We're so mixed up with each other, intermarried. You see, even now, with the present day, our army in Germany, a lot of the boys have married Irish girls, haven't they? So how are we going on when all the bother's finished? They'll be coming over here, won't they? I can't see how they can sort things out, really. We get so intermingled, and we're all human beings, that's the point. And I don't see that we've any right to criticise other nations and things. That's one thing I think the common market is good for, to get us all together. On the other hand, human nature being what it is, we all want stuff for ourselves, we're selfish.
What about the British soldiers? Did you see much of them?
Oh, yes. The Americans came in at the finish, and we were told not to mix with the Americans because they were very... very keen on women, you know. and we'd be getting into bother if we mixed with the Americans. We were put against them.
Did you ever meet any?
A few in Abbeville. I never mixed with any of them because I'd got my own boyfriend, you see, and I wanted to keep true to him.
Did you know what was going on the front line, in the trenches, what it was like?
Not really. We didn't know a lot. We only knew by the boys that came to the hospital what they suffered. And so many of them were so ill that as soon as they were well enough to be moved, they were sent to England, you see. And the boys that were well enough to be discharged and sent back to their bases, they didn't talk a lot about it. They took it in the stride. I think one of the chief things was frostbite. Their toes dropped off with being so cold. Isn't it dreadful? Used to make me shudder, that. We had a boy came to... he took the night turn on the switchboard. He was a Scots boy, Jock. And he'd had three toes amputated because of frostbite. So he wasn't sent up to the front line again. He was given the base job. But then we had another boy with shell shock who was on the camps exchange, which was a little exchange outside Abbeville. It was on the Amiens Road near our camp. And I used to go in sometimes to see him, chat to him. And sometimes if he wanted to go down to the town, I'd look after the switchboard for him. And then one night when we had a very bad air raid, his shell shock started up. He starts shaking and going all funny. And he came running out into the camp, and Miss Welsford, our officer, came all along the top of the trenches shouting out, "It's white here, white or Holland." And I shouted, "I'm here, Miss Welsford." She said, "Can you come up?" I said, "Yes." So I had to push past a lot of girls through these... The trenches were built in a zigzag, like that, so that if a shell hit a section, it didn't go all the way along. Anyway, I managed to get out up the steps and out, and I didn't know what she wanted. She said, "The boy in the camps exchange has collapsed with shell shock. Do you know how to work it?" I said, "Yes." So I went in. I'd been in about an hour, and the raid was nearly over when they sent somebody up from the town. And the signal officer, him that wanted us to salute him, you know, and carry on, he said, "What are you doing in here? You've no business in here." I said, "He's no business to pass out anyway." So when I said to Miss Welsford, he wasn't very thankful that I'd been in. He said, "I've no business in there." Anyway, she said, "Take no notice of him. It was very good of you to go in." All known by our second names. Our surnames. You gave your number first, 2365, white K, and your initial last. I will say that to the doctor when I go in, Bottomley K. It's a habit you get into, because the last war was altogether different. I was a sergeant in the ATS and had terrific responsibility. And not only that, I had a home and two children, and it was different. The women were different. As soon as they were off duty, I was stationed in York, you see. They were off up the road to the pub. Now, I don't care for going in pubs and sitting behind a glass. It's not my idea of a lovely way to spend an evening. They liked it, and I'd no objection, as long as they came home sober. But when you get a girl coming home drunk and having to put to bed and vomiting all over the place, it's not nice. People get to know all about it as well. But I had to come home because my husband was kept out at nights, and that meant the two children being left alone. My mother-in-law was going to look after them, but she caved in halfway through, and I had to go home to look after my children.
What happened to my brother?
Did you have any concerts or entertainment?
Oh, yes, plenty. I mentioned that. The YWCA arranged concerts for us. Towards the latter end, not at the beginning, we'd... I've got some pictures, I think, somewhere. Where are we? I've loads of souvenirs. Winifred. This is from... in the camp we had a concert party. And this is from a girl in New York. I hadn't written back to her because we can't be always writing letters. I had to let her go. West 8th Street, New York 11. Dear White, and I was married then, she's addressed it to Mrs. Butter. I saw your letter in the Lioness, that's our magazine, and I replied to the same by writing to the editor, and also mentioned that I was writing to you as well. I've often thought of you through the years, mainly because we acted in that little skit together, The Woman Triumphant, do you remember? It was a little sketch, you know, that she and I did. It suited you so well and the troops liked it, and of course I loved acting in it. Also, I remember you at roll call. You looked so happy and full of beans. I didn't know I did. Only we know how remarkable those days were, mainly because we were at the scrag end of the Victorian era. Now this Second World War has brought us into the limelight again. I'm sorry that the Americans call themselves the WAC, thinking that we, the real WACs, never existed. It is about time the public knew about us. I wrote a long report to Dame Helen, which is being used